Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Adam Barrett. Have you talked to marketing people lately?
Oh, yes. I've talked to lots of marketing people.
And I know we talked about it in a recent episode about your Good Morning America experience and how it's in advertising, and reliability is a part of this. Yet my experience with marketing folks is often less than helpful for creating a reliable product. You know, I'm trying to work with a design team recently.
You have to be nice here, Fred. We have to speak nicely.
Okay. So I usually pick on procurement engineers as the arch nemesis to what we do. Yet my experience last week with these guys was they wanted the product to never fail, to work forever, and to have a million features in it. And oh, by the way, it needs to come out next week. And using a little hyperbole, whatever that word is, exaggerating a little bit. Yet I just got the impression they didn't get it. This is not, you can't just do an invention every week and create a new product and it'll work every time. We use the analogy of a phone. I had a marketing guy once hand me a portable inkjet printer prototype. They were looking at creating a battery-powered inkjet printer. And he said, "Can you tell me how long this will last?" And I said, I'm immediately starting to think of, well, when do you need this? What's the environment this would be in, portable versus on a desktop, and all these other nerdy engineering things, right? And as he's handing it to me, I'm distracted and we dropped it. Now, I'm saying we kind of loosely here, but I think I dropped it. And it shattered, went into a million pieces. I said, "It'll last about 3 feet." And he didn't appreciate that.
Not funny.
Not funny. But just this recent experience, though, is that the marketing team, you know, they made the argument, or she made the argument, that they're the voice of the customer. They just want a product that will work. And I get that. Yet I'm also talking to the design team, and they have a list of features that they have to invent, basically, how they're going to implement those things. So they're head down on the workbench trying to figure out how to invent a new product in these feature sets. And as a reliability professional, I'm sitting there going, you know, these two people need to talk. These two groups need to engage with each other. But how do we do that? How do we get – I was at just frustration at one point. And luckily, I had a nice long drive home. I listened to some of our previous episodes, do a shameless plug here for our own show, and started to reflect on that. And I was looking forward to chatting with you, Adam, because it's one of those that this didn't come from a customer or a listener to the show. This is a question I have. How do you get these two disparate groups with diametrically opposed or conflicting priorities to actually hear each other?
I'm gonna do a little bit of a Confucius say here, and let me ask you this question so we can lead ourselves to it and see if this is a good answer. What do these two groups have in common? They have something in common. They have something very strongly in common.
Well, they're getting the same person writes their paycheck, or the same
exactly. And who writes that person their paycheck?
Yeah, the customer. They're all working for the same customer. It's just,
okay.
It's that analogy of the elephant, right? They're touching different parts of the elephant and don't see the whole picture.
But they both don't want that elephant to die. You know, they don't want the customer to go away. That's what's connecting them. So I'm always a big believer in things like this with goals. you know, clearly defining the goal and making sure it's the fundamental goal. So for both the marketing people and the engineering people and the reliability engineer, the one thing they all don't want is for the customer to go away. They want the customer to purchase their product again because that's success for the company, that's success for their career, that's their paycheck. So I think what we need to do is to probably make sure that we connect them with that. So clearly define that goal and make that their goal. And let them do their derivative of how they can contribute to that goal. If you tell the marketing, you know, team that, or whoever, project management, that you have to release by this date, that's your goal. If you tell reliability, you have to hit this reliability date, that's your goal. They are going to go head to head. And because they're being measured on just that. But neither one is truly in line with the higher level goal. And I think that that's probably the answer. Because once you do that, there's going to be a camaraderie of assisting each other in achieving this goal that they then will see how they can contribute to with their specialty. And that's, I'm kind of going a little bit of the Toyota way here. You know, that's kind of, that is in the Toyota way.
I want to say kumbaya, you know, I want to give you a hug or big group hug or something here, but that's not how this team was operating. They didn't even see the need to talk to each other. And we talked about this disconnect between the senior managers and the workers, the engineering teams, the guys doing the work, in that middle management setting up different priorities. But this is different. This is a disconnect for how we interpret what the customer wants.
Okay, but now let's look at it personally for you. What was your role? Were you a consultant or were you an employee?
Yeah, I was consulting. It was in a technical realm, and I asked the question, well, how good does it need to be? And the program manager then, it was this chance that one of the marketing managers was walking by, so grabbed him, and I had a captive audience for a few minutes and said, well, how good does the product need to be? There's a whole another 20 different topics in talking to a marketing person. But they had a very clear picture of what they thought the customer wanted concerning reliability, and cost and time to market outweighed it dramatically. Whereas the engineering team was really looking for feature set and functionality. And so, reliability was in there, but not quite connected.
But then, to me, it seems if for me is I would quickly switch who I was talking to, and I would see if I could talk to the people at the top who are directly tied to the customer. So that's going to be kind of getting up at the executive level, right? Where they're, you know, being measured on if they're in the public market, their trading value, or if it's the sales numbers that they get their bonus associated to. You would have to, if I was in that situation, I would try to find a way to communicate with that person and find out if they can understand what it takes to connect these two people. If these two people are going to stay disconnected based on their annual goals, which they have to achieve because that's how their job's dependent, if somebody else higher above them is not going to switch their goals to be unified, there's really not a lot you can do. And sometimes that's just a case. You're like, all right, there's not much I can do with this, you know? And that's, you know, if you were a direct employee for that company and that was kind of, you know, just if that was kind of just a continuing cultural, you know, status and there was no opportunity to see a switch of somebody at a higher level joining these people's goals, and you really believe that that's the way to do it, you should find a culture that matches your belief. I mean, and that's the kind of thing with if you were to read the Toyota Way or other books like that, that's really what they say. They say if, you know, you can't have a certain selfishness or disconnect from a common objective within a company and succeed. And so, you know, if you're in that environment, that's not a healthy environment, and that battle is going to go on forever and ever, and companies like that go out of business. So it's, you know, you can't fix everybody and you can't fix everything. They have to at least, you know, be interested in the process, right?
Well, what you outline is pretty much what we did at Hewlett Packard when I was there, is we realized this. And there was the arch nemesis, I'm using air quotes here, of procurement, of always driving to the lowest cost. And what we did is went to senior management and said, illustrated the disconnect, and then said our proposal, one of many different things we proposed, was change the bonus structure, align their goals is probably the right way to phrase it. And it worked. It's just last week, it's in your face, and you see it. It's frustrating. Is this the curse of knowing better? I don't know, but it's not.
I mean, but the thing is, that cost reduction team, they might know better, but they're not going to do it differently. So if you're measured purely on the end of the year of you have to pull $10,000 of cost out of this latest product we're developing, that's what you're going to do. You're going to pull $10,000 of cost, right? So it doesn't matter. I mean, I've talked with people in those situations and they get it. They get how they could potentially be doing damage or whatever, but that's not going to change what they're doing. And if I was them, I wouldn't change it either. It's right. Not until you get to the people above them who then say, okay, you need to and adjust it to where it is a goal that is not potentially conflicting. Because, you know, I always start off with the assumption, and I think it's true 99.9% of the time, everybody wants to do the right thing. Everybody wants to do a good job. But you're still going to base your actions on your reward system. Because at the end of the day, you know, that's how you keep your job. That's how you feed your family. So, you know, these people, there's no point talking to them if their goals are directing them a different way. You're going to, if you were them, you'd go by your goals. So that's why I said you pretty much quickly have to go up to a higher level in the company, the people who are directing the culture, and see if they'll change that. But if they aren't going to listen, then there's no real point in continuing to work with them.
That's true. That's true. And I'm thinking of if you're in that situation as a listener in some of our previous discussions, and Adam, you and I talked about a couple of things you can do, and you're exactly very consistent with what we talked about before. Go to the level of the organization that then can set those directions. Yet, what I found, and part of dealing with my frustration once I had time to think about it, was come back and say, how can I align the reliability target? And this is, in what you mentioned, is I find all universally true. People want to create a good product for their customer. And good is defined lots of different ways. And most people have some reliability and quality threshold that is usually a big part of what they consider to be good. What we can do is help them quantify that and allow them to balance it with the other measurables that they have, whether it's time to market, cost, or feature set, or whatever.
Wait, Fred, though, but do we do that? I mean, are we egocentric? I think that we're equally at fault, because the reliability team's going to request a reliability that's not reasonable for a successful product.
You know?
I think we have to be honest here, too, that if you leave it up to us, we're measured on reliability, and we're going to keep it in testing so long that you're going to miss your time to market and nobody's going to care about the product. So we have to be stopped as well, right? I mean, it's that same thing. Our goal, but again, even if we know better, we're still going to do that if that's what we're being told. You know, are we being held accountable for time to market as well? You know, are they like, all right, Adam, you're the reliability engineer in this project, and your goal is to make sure that we have X reliability, but our product has to be at this time to market, and our goal is truly to take this percentage of the market. Now, all of a sudden, I'm thinking at a bigger level, and I'm thinking, okay, if my goal is to help, you know, sell to this percentage of the market, I need to ask the marketing guy about some questions. And he's, if that's his goal, he's like, I need to ask Adam about some questions. And, you know, all of a sudden, we're working together. Whereas if you make my goal much more, you know, specified just to reliability, all of a sudden, everybody else is just in my way rather than being a teammate. So the reliability guys need to be stopped as well, because otherwise we will test it for 10 years straight. Well, and we will put in so much robustness that it's ridiculous.
I think that's a subject for another one. Is that a discussion, though, is that I think a good, in my mind, good, I'm using a little bit too loosely here, is a good reliability professional will facilitate finding that balance, for will make it reliable enough. But we're not the ones making anything, right? We're influencing design decisions, and we're influencing marketing presentations. We're influencing and translating what customer requirements are. Yet when I get two groups that, and it, for this client last week, it's not an engagement where I've got the bandwidth nor the charter to go change their culture. This was a very specific task. It's take the priorities from the different parts of that group and help them see how it's in their own interest to facilitate this change that would make the product more reliable. So the quality manager recognized that they needed this expertise to run a particular accelerated test, but they needed funding from the R&D team and support, plus they needed to understand the importance of that from a customer's point of view. And the two separate goals were just talking, or two different teams were just talking past each other. And the project was in jeopardy at that point for me as the reliability engineer on that team. So by going back and reframing the project as in the marketing best interest and as in the R&D best interest to get to that inherent threshold of what's reliable enough, then it took some traction and it looks like it might pan out. But we don't always have the time to go back and change the culture. That takes time and changing the bonus structure and proving that it's actually that's the way business is done now. That does take time. So I think part of my frustration was that the culture was very fragmented. Yet as a reliability engineer, we have the opportunity to call out that generic, it has to work for the customer hat and follow the ways it's being interpreted in different groups and to some extent use that against them to get a reliable product to the customer. I agree that we have to think the bigger picture, and most people do have that threshold. And that's where I go back to that it's helped them translate it into their own goals. And some places that works better than others, I fully admit that. Yet when you only have a few days to make a change, it's at least the approach I took, and it looks like it might work. Maybe I can go back and highlight to their senior managers this breakdown of the culture and how damaging it is, using my selfish point of view of helping them create reliable products. And that may have some traction. I think I need to know more about them and what their customers really want and what they're looking for. But it's an approach anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course, you have to work within the constraint of, the scope of what you're doing.
Sometimes that gets tough. That's, I think.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm describing a fantasy situation where you walk into the CEO's office and you're like, we need to change everybody's bonus structure. And he's like, that's a great idea.
I understand it.
That's not how that usually goes. I guess maybe that's more of a guideline for, trying to manage your expectations of what is possible, within the situation. How broad is the scope and how largely have you been engaged? Because, I've been engaged at every level to where the owner of the company says, we need to learn more about this. And then there's that opportunity to be like, okay, here's something of how these, groups should interact, where compared to where the director of engineering brings me in and says, we got to know what the wear out is for this product, then I'm obviously not going to look to how this interacts with the other departments.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Yeah. No, never a dull day as a reliability engineer. That's for sure. And so as you're listening, and if this brings up any experiences in your recent past, let us know. And what do you think of this topic, or did we give you an insight or two that maybe can help you? But more importantly, let us know if you've got questions. Grab your cup of coffee or favorite beverage and have a seat with us and let us know what you'd like to talk about. So with that, Adam, I think we can wrap this show up.
Yeah, it's good. Good conversation.
All right. And once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.